Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the radio program, Today's Issues, on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issue is the name of this show. Thank you for listening each and every day to this program and throughout the day to American Family Radio, AFR.net on the internet. I'm Tim Wildman. Good morning, Walker Wildman.
Good morning. Good to be here.
And Ray Pritchard joins us from Dallas. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Doing well. You're here. You're home this week, right?
Home for a few days, then off to New Jersey for Labor Day weekend, speaking at a Bible conference at America's Keswick in New Jersey.
America's what now?
Keswick.
Is that a town?
Yeah, Keswick is a town in England and brought forth a teaching on the Christian life. We sometimes call the victorious Christian life, started in the 1800s, and they have a conference named after that called America's Keswick. It's in Whiting, New Jersey. That's in the southern part of the state. Really nice area.
Got you. Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good to be back with you again.
Fred's with OneNewsNow.com, which is our news agency here, OneNewsNow.com. Check out that website and American Family Radio News. Walker, what are we going to be doing on Facebook today?
Well, we are live streaming on the Today's Issues Facebook page. We do that each Monday through Friday from 10 to 11:30 Central. And another thing I wanted to mention, and also the stories will be posted up there. Another thing I wanted to mention is our Share-a-thon, our fall Share-a-thon is coming up October 17th through 19th. And during this Share-a-thon and a few days leading up to it, we will play listener testimonies. So if your life has been positively impacted by American Family Radio, then we want to hear your listener story, and we will probably air it on those days leading up to and during our fall Share-a-thon. And so you'll call into this number I'm about to give out, and you will be prompted to record your message. Try to keep it under a minute. Your name and your state, maybe the station you listen to, and how AFR has impacted your life. Here's a phone number to call: 877-876. 8893. The phone number to call and leave your listener testimony is 877-876-8893.
Okay, so you said if AFR has positively influenced your life and you'd like to share with us, give us a call and leave your testimony, right?
That's right.
Now, what if don't call if we've negatively influenced?
Yes, unfortunately we're not taking those calls.
We're not going to air those during Share-a-thon, so don't expect to hear them.
No.
Okay.
Those get marked as spam.
Okay.
And on our call line.
That's nice.
All right. Well, hey, before I get to Fred, I want to ask you. You live in Dallas, Ray. What's the growing relationship between Dallas and Houston?
There has been an unprecedented outpouring of love and support and encouragement and prayer and practical relief of water and supplies and huge semi-truck rolling down Interstate 45. You know, it's somebody said who's in the middle of Houston just a couple of hours ago, this is a disaster zone. It's worse than what you see on TV, which is hard to believe because it's so awful to watch it on TV. But I think the good news is Texans are tough, strong people. And Dallas has been rallying, and Austin and San Antonio, and really the whole nation. We got the Cajun Navy coming in from Louisiana. So people by the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and millions of people have been rallying to help the situation in Houston because it is truly dire and is not going to start getting better maybe for 36, 48 hours from now, something like that.
Yeah, and to Ray's point, I believe you're familiar, Ray, with Pastor Jack Graham.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Prestonwood Baptist. He was on Fox and Friends this morning, and we want to play a little bit of that interview right now because it goes with what Ray is talking about people coming together to help out those dear folks in Houston.
And we have a message of the love of Christ and that God cares, and that's the difference we can make. Once the the time of disaster is done, then we need to be there to help people. And the church will be there long after the flood is gone. Our people at our church, and you don't have to be a big church to help. You can be a small church. You can be just an individual. There's so many great individual ministries that are going on. And business people, we have a businessman in our church, for example, that has a logistics building, and he is offering 18 of his semi-trucks to take down supplies. And people are going and training, and we're seeing people step up to the challenge. And right. As a pastor, that's what's so encouraging when you see the people in your church.
And certainly, gentlemen, the people in Houston need encouragement. If you've been watching any of the live shots again this morning, it is still raining. And it's just, it's worse than yesterday in many parts there. They've had to open up another reservoir, which in order to keep that reservoir from breaking, the wall breaking, they have to relieve the pressure on that, which means more flooding. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people that are being displaced. And you've got, right now, you've got thousands of reserve soldiers, not only from Texas, National Guard soldiers, but also coming in from other states now. According to the governor this morning, up to 15,000 soldiers coming in.
The whole Texas National Guard's been called out, right?
Whole Texas right. National Guard Probably. Has been called out. Here's another aspect, of course, firemen, policemen. But you don't think of these things when you're going through these disasters. These are firemen from Houston, police officers from Houston, whose their own homes have been decimated by this. But they're out helping other people. I mean, it's just...
They're also not robots.
That's right.
They get tired. I saw a police, Ray, I saw a picture yesterday. I don't know if it went viral or not. It was a picture of a Houston police officer sleeping.
Yeah.
He's sitting down on a bench, but his right. head was, he was exhausted.
Yeah.
So you've got people going 18, 20 hours. And this, you know, this kind of recovery effort is in the water, getting people out. And I mean, yeah. It's physically and mentally and emotionally draining. So, yeah, we mm-hmm. got to be praying for the first responders, because that's a tough job. And it's not when the rain ends, the disaster isn't over. In some ways, the hardest part starts once the rain is gone.
All right, so let's go through what they're projecting for the next 48 hours or so. The rain is going to continue probably on into Thursday. They're talking about another up to 20 inches of rain. In that portion.
Wait a minute, Fred, you mean from the time we're talking right now?
Yes.
Right.
That's what
right.
the forecasters are saying. The storm, the system has moved slightly off the coast again, but they're projecting it to come back in. So that portion to the southeast of the core of the city of Houston is just going to continue to get more rain. And also, Louisiana has been kind of forgotten in this, but they are rescuing people in Lake Charles, Louisiana already, because they have been getting rain. Flooding is occurring in many of the neighborhoods of that city of Louisiana, and they are going to continue to get more rain. So that's the reason they called a state of emergency in Louisiana yesterday, because they are starting to feel the impact over the last 12 hours of Harvey, and this is going to continue. President Trump will land shortly in Corpus Christi. He will survey the initial damage that was done in that area by Hurricane Harvey that came ashore on Friday night. He's going to visit some of the coastal communities that were basically destroyed by the winds of Harvey. And then later on this afternoon, the president will fly over to Austin, visit with the governor, Governor Abbott, and they will discuss what more FEMA federal agencies can do.
Well, what do they do? What do they do, Ray, with all these? Dr. Frank Turi is going to join us momentarily, by the way. Fred or Walker, Ray, I'll give you the first shot at this. What are they going to do with all these people who don't have flood insurance, which is probably thousands of people? Are they just. What do you do with a situation like that?
Well, they've declared this a disaster area, so there's going to be an elevated level of federal help for people who lose everything or anything because of the flood. So that's it. But beyond that, those folks are going to be in some real trouble, because really this is, how do you prepare for they're calling this a 500-year flood. And you keep hearing this word biblical, a flood of biblical proportions. How do you prepare for that? That's a tough thing.
Yeah. I read where only 25% of the people there
have flood insurance.
Have flood insurance. Mm-hmm. Because I guess some people would figure, where I live, I don't live on a mountain or anything, but
right.
I would look around and say, this is never going to flood. Here, so I mean, I guess a lot of people are in that situation, and it wouldn't have flooded had it not rained, you know, this much. But I just wonder what you do when you don't have any. Are you just out of your house? You know what I'm saying? You got to have somewhere else to live, and your house is a total loss, or how that works exactly.
I would suspect many people will. They'll just load up what they do have, what they did salvage, and move to maybe where family is, and just
like they did in New Orleans,
after Katrina.
Some people may not be back to Houston because their home's ruined. There's nothing of value.
Nothing to go home to,
right?
No. And they don't have the money to repair it. Mm-hmm. And some of them may be some of it. I would suspect a lot of this is going to be unrepairable,
right?
Don't you think, Ray?
Let's say, just take the parameters you gave. Mm-hmm. So you've got 36, 40 more hours of rain, but it would be a big mistake to think once the rain leaves, everything's okay.
Yeah.
Because the water, the ground is already saturated. There's no place for the water to go down. So it's going to take days and weeks just to bring the water level down. And while you're waiting for that, further destruction to homes and buildings and cars. It's going to be a disaster zone, not just an area, but a disaster zone for months to come.
Yeah, and I tell you another thing that insult to injury is summertime is about to come back to that area.
Yeah.
The cloud covering for the last few days have caused the temperatures to be in the 70s. And you're talking about when that goes away. It's going to still be summertime in southeast Texas, and it's probably going to be in the 90s. I'm just saying you're going to have that to contend with, as well as mosquitoes. And it's just, I know it's all bad news, but it is. It's all bad news.
Bad news right now.
Yeah, except for, you know, the people that are helping down there and are going to help down there. But there's no sugarcoating this. This is a colossal disaster for, and the economy will be impacted for years to come. Maybe Katrina would be the only thing I can think of comparable in recent memory that would have this kind of impact. Maybe Sandy, you could argue. Joining us from North Carolina is our good friend Dr. Frank Turek. And Dr. Frank has the radio program Cross Examined on the weekends here on American Family Radio. He does debates on college campuses often, and his area of expertise is in the area of Christian apologetics. Frank, wanted to talk to you this morning about, we talked about what do we discuss with folks that maybe they would be interested in hearing about. You had mentioned natural disasters, and then you cited a Bible verse. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I know quite frequently the question that comes up, if God, why evil? One of the kinds of evil, of course, is the kind of evil that human beings do to one another. That's not what we're talking about here today. That's moral evil. But natural evil, why do disasters like this occur? And you can, I think, trace it all back to a choice that was made in the garden. But that choice has affected everybody since then. And this entire world, this entire universe, is what we call fallen. And Jesus actually spoke about this in Luke chapter 13. It's just a few verses. Here's what he says. There were some people there who told Jesus about the Galileans whose blood Pilate had mixed with their sacrifices. In other words, Pilate had killed some Galileans and mixed their blood with the sacrifices. So there's an example of moral evil. He talks about moral evil, then he talks about natural evil. Here's what he says. Do you think that these Galileans who were worse sinners than all the other Galileans because they suffered this way? Do you really think they were worse because they suffered this way? And Jesus says, I tell you no, but unless you repent, you too will all perish. Or those 18 who died when the tower in Siloam fell on them. Do you think they were more guilty than all others living in Jerusalem? I tell you no, but unless you repent, you too will all perish. So he uses moral evil, Pilate mixing the blood with the sacrifices of the Galileans, and then a natural evil, a natural disaster where a tower falls on somebody. And our inclination is to say, well, or some may say, well, it's cause and effect. These people get what they deserved. And Jesus is saying, no, we're all guilty. We're all fallen. And the same fate awaits us all unless we repent. And so Jesus isn't, he's rebutting the idea that when evil happens to certain people, it's because they deserve it. And other people, evil doesn't happen to them, so they don't deserve it. Actually, what Jesus is saying, everybody deserves judgment. But of course, he came to take the judgment away and take all of the sin, all the evil on himself. And so that's the real hope. The real hope is that we put our trust in Christ. We're going to have trouble in this world, he said. But he said, take heart, I've overcome the world. So I guess Jesus is really saying here, don't think that because a bad thing happens to a certain group of people that they're more evil than you. Everybody is deserving of judgment, but God in his love has provided a way out, and that's himself.
But God could have stopped this hurricane from coming into Texas. Why didn't he?
Of course he could have, yes. And he may have stopped a lot of hurricanes from coming into Texas. We just don't know. The question is, can God bring good from this kind of disaster? And I think if you look on the bright side of it, yes, of course he can. In fact, it's mobilizing people right now to help. You just played a clip from Jack Graham from Prestonwood there. There's people all over the world who are mobilized to bring the good news of Jesus and to bring relief to those people. That's where good can come out of evil. And there's some good that we'll never see because there's something out there known as the ripple effect, which says that every event that occurs ripples forward into the future to affect trillions of other events. We can't trace all those because we're not outside of time. We don't have the knowledge. God can. God can see how a event that's disastrous here can lead to great good in the future, even if we never see how it's done.
One other question. I know these guys have questions. And, you know, when we're getting into these kinds of issues, you know, we could be here a year from now talking about this. But at the same time, I want a follow-up question for you, Frank. God does perform miracles still today in individuals' lives. We hear testimonies of such. And he can intervene in nature because he's God and he did create all things. So he can calm the water,
of course,
as he did in the Bible. However, miracles by definition are unusual, it seems to me. And God normally lets nature run its course on planet Earth. So you get a storm and it gets over the Gulf of Mexico and it soaks up that energy and it builds and then it comes ashore. Of course, who knew it was going to stick around for 4 or 5 days to dump all that rain? But I'm just saying that's some people call it Mother Nature. That's nature, and God doesn't normally. How do you know if God intervenes, like you said, to stop things in the past that would have hurt people? But just because nature runs its course and God allows it to doesn't mean God doesn't care about people.
Of course not, because he can bring good from evil. And if God stopped all instances of evil at all times, then we would, of course, never learn from any of our choices. Think about moral evil for a second. If God stopped us from sinning all the time, then this world would be a situation where our choices would be trivial.
We'd be robots.
Yeah, we couldn't exercise our free will. And if God stopped every natural disaster at all times, then this would be heaven, right? This is not heaven. We all recognize that. We're on the road to heaven, and the only way to get there is to go through Jesus. But no, bad things happen, but good can come from bad things, and God can do that. In fact, C.S. Lewis famously said, pain is God's megaphone to arouse a deaf world. And he also said, sometimes you only look up when you're on your back. And of course, Paul talks about this, James talks about this, that sometimes we need evil to wake us up to God.
Right, go ahead.
So, Frank, I hear people saying, in fact, we've seen it on in social media, what is God saying through this devastating flood? You've already given us part of the answer, but just on the street level, you're talking to a guy around a water cooler or you're having a cup of coffee. And he goes, what is God saying to us through a flood like this? How would you begin to answer a question like that?
I would say the same thing Jesus said. Why did the tower fall in Siloam on those people? It's not because necessarily they were more evil than you. He's pointing out that this world is fallen, and we're all gonna have the similar fate at some point. At some point, we're all gonna die, unless Jesus comes back before then. So we need to repent. That's really what this is about. God hasn't told me or anyone else why this particular event occurred, but I know why. I don't know why. I'm finite. He's infinite, and He can use these disasters for His good now and in the future. And the main point that Jesus makes in Luke 13 is we all need to repent. It's not because the people in Houston are worse than the people in, say, in Cleveland. That's not what this is about. This is about the fact that we're all fallen. We live in a fallen world. And the only way to re-achieve paradise is to go through Jesus.
Amen.
Well, Frank, give your website, and what do you have coming up this weekend?
Yeah, this weekend I'm going to have both Jay Warner Wallace, the cold case homicide detective, and Sean McDowell. We've got some amazing resources for kids that we want people to know about. There's a new study Bible out for kids, and Jim Wallace has come out with another book for kids. You know, one of the problems that you guys know is that about 75% of young people leave the church once they leave the home. Once they go out into college, they basically leave the church. Some leave the faith forever. And one thing we need to start doing is teaching our kids at a very young age why Christianity is true. We want to inoculate them. We don't want to isolate them, because they're going to run into the world at some point. We want to inoculate them so when they do run into the world, they're ready. And we're going to talk about that this weekend, Saturday at 10 Eastern, 9 Central, right here on the American Family Radio Network.
Before kickoff.
That's right. Is this week the first?
College football starts this weekend.
Okay, who are those? You're with Mississippi State, right?
I'm Mississippi State, but every school about plays starting.
Alabama, first. Florida, big games.
Florida
tonight.
State, yeah. Mm-hmm. They start big games all this weekend. Everybody's got to have a little escapism, right?
That's right. I wonder if there's any schedule down in the Houston area. I wonder if
Know what? LSU was supposed to play BYU,
right?
In a matchup down there in Houston, but they moved that to New Orleans because of the flooding. Hey, listen. Thanks a lot, Frank, for your time. God bless you, my friend. You traveling any more campuses coming up?
Oh yeah, we got some coming up. We're going to be at Penn State, that's going to be September 22nd. We're going to be at Winthrop up here near Charlotte on the 26th of September. We've got several events coming up. Going to be in Alabama
atheist?
Next weekend. What's that?
Debate an atheist or what?
If they show up. This is when we do I don't have enough faith to be an atheist on a college campus. So we do the presentation, then we take questions, and atheists always show up. So it makes for a real
But you take questions from the audience, right?
Oh, of course.
You don't know. You don't know what the questions are going to be, although you do know what the questions are going to be because you've had them 1,000 times. But
yeah.
Now, where are you going to be in Alabama?
Well, I'm going to be speaking in Russellville, Alabama next weekend, not this weekend, next weekend.
Well, that's not 50 miles. That's 50 miles from us here.
That's not far. Yeah, it's right on the other side of you go east from Tupelo. It's out.
Yeah, Alabama would be east from Mississippi, Frank. You are good, man.
That's correct.
You're so good with geography.
I'm good, man.
Is South Carolina south of North Carolina, Frank?
Is it?
I think it is.
Hey, you know, there are some places in north that may dip lower than the south. Did you know that?
I stand corrected.
They do. Some places.
Okay. Hey, Frank, take care. Thank you.
Thanks, brother.
Okay.
See you.
Cross-Examined is the name of Dr. Frank Turek's ministry, T-U-R-E-K. He's doing a lot of great work, Frank is, to advance the kingdom. We're going to come back. Dr. Ray Pritchard with us, Walker Wildman, Fred Jackson. We're going to come back. Sandy Rios will be with us in a few minutes. Much more to discuss here. With all the news about the hurricane, you may have missed the story about North Korea. Well, we're going to tell you what they did in the last 24 hours. We'll let Fred tell you when we get back from the break. Stay with us.
On the next Today's Issues.
Walker Wildman is handling our Facebook presence in the world.
Yeah, if you have a Facebook account, just type in Today's Issues in your search bar, and then our page will pop up. And you can watch the show there every day. or you can view all the articles that we talk about.
Right, but you can also be our friend.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
You know, the Bible describes Jesus' last days on planet Earth. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to Israel, the Holy Land, March 8th through the 16th. And we'll be visiting those places that the Bible mentions in Jesus' last days, including his time in the Garden of Gethsemane, which is on the Mount of Olives. We're also going to go to the house of Caiaphas and see the very steps that Jesus walked on his way there from the Garden of Gethsemane. And then finally, that day we'll be going to the Via Dolorosa, the path that Jesus walked to the cross. So it's going to be a fantastic time in Israel as we see what happened to Jesus and we talk about the hope that we have in his resurrection. For more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. Or call 800-FAMILIES, option 5. 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Stearns from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. These are difficult days for the state of Texas and many across the nation. We still do not know the magnitude of what the floodwaters wrought in Houston. But beyond the nation's fourth largest city are smaller towns and communities that suffered much more damage. One FEMA official fears many people are still trapped in their homes, unable to signal they're in danger. And there is growing apprehension the human toll of this storm could grow significantly. Meanwhile, in Houston, police and firefighters are frustrated over reports of looting. The Houston Chronicle reports in one incident, looters opened fire on first responders. Nerves are getting frayed, no doubt. Meanwhile, relief efforts are underway. The Southern Baptist Convention's disaster relief is on the ground, as is Samaritan's Purse. I posted direct links to their humanitarian efforts at toddstearns.com. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman. Today's Issue is the name of this program. We're here for another hour, approximately, and American Family Radio broadcasting on 100 and how many stations, Walker?
184.
184 stations across the good old U.S. of A. By the way, our Victoria station in Texas and our Corpus Christi station are both down due to lack of power. But our Conroe station north of Houston is still on the air.
That's amazing.
I know. I don't know exactly where the tower site is, but 88.3 there, still broadcasting in Conroe and other parts of Houston. Mm-hmm. So we're thankful we're able to be on the air, but two of our stations are off the air, but just because of power.
Yeah.
As I've said before, I said yesterday, those are just radio towers and radio stations that broadcast a signal. I don't mean in any way, shape, or form to compare that to you know, the human suffering going on because of the hurricane, the aftermath of the hurricane. So what are we on Facebook, Walker? We've been posting our stories.
Yes, I posted two One News Now stories that both cover the Hurricane Harvey, or now a Tropical Storm Harvey. And also I found this, we haven't discussed it, but I found a Fox News article where Bass Pro Shops is donating up to 80 of their brand new tracker boats to aid in the rescue in the Houston area and all of South Texas. So I thought that was neat that a company that already has this kind of equipment is donating it to law enforcement.
We're starting to get all kinds of stories. There's a company up in Michigan announced this morning they're going to send 2,000 kayaks down.
Wow.
Just so people, maybe they're in a shelter right now, and when the rain stops, that's the only way they're going to be able to
get
around.
That's
a
really practical donation, isn't it?
Get back over to where your house is and maybe get some goods or whatever the case may be, but 2,000 kayaks on their way from this firm in Michigan. And we're hearing this over and over again, and as much as we're critical sometimes of the Hollywood celebs, they're getting involved, football stars starting funds. I mean, this is the good side of a terrible, terrible event.
Yeah.
And the president was talking about this yesterday in a news conference, heard another numbers of other people. The country is coming together. It really is. You know, there's the Charlottesvilles of this world divide, but as sad an event as this is in Houston, it is bringing the country together from different political spectrums. You don't hear anybody. I haven't heard a criticism of President Trump with regards to this yet. I understand. I'm not living in a...
Well, that's because it's Bush's fault.
Bush's fault.
Yeah. It's President Bush's fault. He's the go-to natural disaster.
Oh, okay, yeah, remembering back.
Because of the Katrina. This
is a bad joke. Fell on deaf ears for Fred. Hey, let me introduce Sandy. And then, Fred, I want you to tell us about the story I talked about before the break.
Right.
Sandy Rios joins us from her home. Sandy is she's a director of governmental affairs for the American Family Association, and heard each morning on Sandy Rios in the morning. On AFR here. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Sandy, want Fred to read the story, tell us about the story, and then you can comment, okay?
Well, I know Sandy's aware of this. You probably talked about it this morning. North Korea firing a missile over Japan. This missile traveled some 1,677 miles, reached a height of 341 miles, right over, and that hasn't happened. There hasn't been a missile gone over Japan since 2009. I have no doubts whatsoever. The leadership in North Korea taking advantage of the attention being played on Houston right now, and President Trump kind of a one-line response this morning. You know, we'll respond in ways that are necessary to this kind of thing. But we're just we've been so focused on Houston, and rightly so. However, there are other dangers that President Trump has to deal with.
Just to be clear, and what we're talking about here is North Korea fired a missile, and the missiles thus far, this except dating back to 2009, they drop into the sea out there, not going over another sovereign nation. In this case, what you're talking about here is they fired a missile that went over Japan, and then landed in the ocean out there, broke apart and everything. But Sandy, again, another provocative move here by this Kim Jong-un, the dictator there in North Korea. I'm not so sure there's much anything we can do about it, though.
Well, I don't know about that either. I think we probably should have done something a long time ago. But when we should have done something was right after, in the couple of years after 9/11. Because that's when the father, Kim Jong-il, was flexing his muscles more and more. But there was no stomach in the Bush administration for taking on another conflict. And I remember John Bolton just pretty much begging the Bush administration to do something about North Korea. And they just felt like the American people didn't have a stomach for another conflict. And so we've let it fester. And we have bought them off. We've bought them off and bought them off. And now we have, I think this son is crazier than the father. And I would say, you know, this, just to be clear, the danger here is that we are, the worst fear is that they will put some sort of nuclear weapon on one of these missiles and launch it. They're trying to, you know, improve their ability to launch a missile. And the missile would then act as a nuclear warhead. And we do believe that they can reach the west coast of this country, can reach Alaska, can reach Hawaii, and certainly they can reach their neighbors. But I think they're trying to perfect their aim, and nobody's stopping them.
Yeah, we're going to have to wait till they shoot first, though. Otherwise, it's going to be us starting a nuclear war. That's the way it's going to be. That's the options, seems to me here.
Well, you know what, Tim? I think I don't. This is just said from my own lack of experience.
That was a 50% cynic right there in me. just to be clear, I'm not. But I am. I am looking at this from a very practical, real world level, and I don't see us shooting a weapon in there, because then the people are going to say, "Well, U.S., you shot first. This guy launched. Now we're in a nuclear war." So I think go ahead, Sandy. Go ahead, comment.
You know, I think on some certainly that's true, Tim. And I don't have the solution, so I don't even want to pretend that I do. I would say, you know, wouldn't you think that the people that live in the region, like the Japanese, the South Koreans, who are prospering beyond measure, so are the Japanese, will bear some, they should be taking some responsibility for this. Because, I mean, they've got to fight back. It's their neighbor. And it seems like it's their neighborhood.
Yeah.
And they're the ones that need to kind of bring into control. They're under tremendous threat, you know. There's no love lost between the Koreans and the Japanese.
Right.
And
Sandy, what are the chances that the South Koreans do what Tim suggested? What if they take matters into their own hands? I mean, as you said, they're the ones most at risk here. Is there a chance that the folks in Seoul would just say, we can't wait any longer? Would they strike first?
Well, you know what? It probably won't surprise you to know that through the decades, the South Koreans have been influenced and infiltrated by the communist North. And they don't have the will they once had. At one time, it was clearer to the South Koreans, the differences between them and the North Korean government, and what the difference between freedom. But now we are seeing infiltration. We're seeing, in effect, the kids in public schools who, like our kids, have forgotten their history. Now they've grown up to be the leaders. And you have a South Korean government right now that's actually quite liberal. So I think I do not want to put on the mantle of an expert on this military matters, but just my common sense tells me that the South Koreans are not going to do this. I'll tell you something. The South Koreans made all kinds of compromises while I was chairman of the North Korea Freedom Coalition and paying a lot more attention to that part of the world. The South Koreans were appeasing the North Koreans left and right because they didn't want the barrier that militarization zone to be erased. The last thing they wanted was for thousands, if not millions, of North Koreans to descend into South Korea and mess up their economy.
Yeah.
So that's how this is, you know, the nature of man. It's just, it repeats itself all over the place. I think that their high standard on freedom and oppression isn't as high as it once was.
Yeah, and Fred. Fred's going to play a clip for us in just a moment from Sebastian Gorka, but this I think this says what's the most scary, one of the scariest aspects of this whole story involving North Korea is the impotence of China to do anything to stop it. I mean, they're in the region too, and you start a war over there, you know, they're going to be affected, and they're going to have refugees coming over from North Korea and so forth. But everybody always said, well, China can stop North Korea if they want to. I don't believe that anymore. But anyway, go ahead, Fred.
Well, along with dealing with Houston, along with dealing now with this North Korea, the president has troubles literally in the House, in the White House. And the latest advisor to resign is Dr. Sebastian Gorka, who resigned last Friday, I believe it was. He's one of his, you know, very loyal to the president. He was on Fox and Friends this morning, and he said he, along with Steve Bannon, still love the president's agenda, make America great again. But he said the president is not going to succeed because basically the president has enemies inside the White House.
The MAGA platform, the Make America Great Again platform that brought us into the White House, there are a lot of people in that building who really don't agree with it and weren't associated with it, and that's why I left, so we can support the president from the outside, because that's why he was elected. And he's not going to give up. The question is, are the people around him going to support him, at least the people on the outside like myself, Steve Bannon? We are going to support him to the fullest. The really damaging stuff, the 125 national security leaks in the first 6 months. As far as I'm concerned, those are coming from Obama holdovers. We have a massive amount of holdovers who do not agree with this president and don't understand that as a government civil servant, you serve the president, not your own agenda.
You know Sebastian, don't you, Sandy, I think?
I do.
Yeah.
Yep.
Were you surprised that he resigned?
Well, given the fact that almost all the national security advisors who I respect and admire have already left, not the least of Steve Bannon, of course, left several months ago, was removed from that particular body within the White House, but also, and I'm just going blank on my friends, Rick, another national security expert whose name is less familiar, but he is a key player in that. He was unceremoniously released also when McMaster began to flex his muscles. And I know a lot of people. I know a lot of patriots that have tried to serve this president. And I think what's happening, Tim, my best understanding is that the family is the problem, is the biggest problem. Because I think this is probably Trump's greatest weakness.
Oh, they're not they're not going anywhere. You're talking about Ivanka and Jared Kushner?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, see, they're not resigning. Yeah. All the rest of them will leave out of maybe, not all the rest of them, but some, those who want to leave will leave out of frustration. But that's family. So
yes,
they're not going anywhere.
But what I always say, I may have said this on this show, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but I think as a businessman, when you're trying to make a business decision, you want to hear every opinion. You want to hear this plan, no, we should do it, we should build, no, we should reduce, no, we should lay off people. You want to hear everything. And then you make your decision. That's kind of what businessmen do.
Yeah.
And I think that the biggest weakness that Donald Trump has that he doesn't understand, that maybe he probably does now, that this is different, that policy and conviction on issues is not the same thing as just a bit different point of view on a business advancement. Mm-hmm. You know, like when you have discussions like that, I would say most of the people in the room want the business to succeed. They just have a different vision of what must happen. We've got a situation where we have people who actually want to undermine and destroy the country as we know it. And there is no compromise because the end game is not the same for those various groups. So for some of them, it's just sheer power. But it has nothing to do with the best interests of the American people. And I think Trump naively thought that that's what everybody would think. They just have a different way. He just thought, like a businessman, that they just had a different way of getting there. But that's not the case. So he allowed, in fact, in the early days of the presidency, he allowed, certainly he was trying to reach out and appease the establishment, the Never Trumpers, and they quickly snatched power and appointed mm-hmm. all their people to posts who proceeded to undermine him at every level and still are.
Yeah.
And so then when he added his family, who are non-political, at least they were, they know mm-hmm. nothing. They're from New York. They're just kids. They may have success in business, but they don't know anything about public policy. And their buddies are other New Yorkers who were affiliated with Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. Those are the people that are still safe in the White House.
And they are New York liberals.
That's right. And they have then now systematically been purging the real Trump loyalists who represent the interests of the American people.
Yeah, I do think we need to continue, obviously, to pray for President Trump. I do think his gut instincts are basically right on most issues. He does not have a solid worldview foundation, certainly not a solid biblical worldview foundation, but we all knew this. But the choices were between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. That's not a choice, you know, in terms of who's going to be the chief executive of the country. And I do think President Trump surrounded himself with a lot of good people initially, but the war goes on between the establishment and the globalist and the people who love this country and want to see, so. That's going to be ongoing, and it's going to be tough on the president because he's going to have to make decisions sometimes that go, if he's going to stay true to his campaign promises, Fred, that go against. We got to let Sandy go. Did you have one more question?
I have one more question for you. Okay, so General Kelly is there. He's brought in as chief of staff.
Right.
Sandy, your opinion on where he plays in all of this is he, would he be a Sebastian Gorka fan or? Is he over on the Trump family side of things in this?
General Kelly is responsible for the purge that you've been seeing.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep.
Yeah. So he's aligned with family. He's aligned with McMaster. He's aligned with, it's a huge disappointment. And I think, you know, remember that he's certainly aligned with John McCain had a lot to do with all of this. John McCain handpicked McMaster to take the first national security general that
Michael Flynn.
Michael Flynn, thank you.
Right.
General John McCain rushed to recommend McMaster, and you know, this is where Donald Trump thought I'll hold out the olive branch to.
Right.
He was trying to make right with everybody, and so
where that got us.
Yeah, and so they what they do, they came up behind him and just have stabbed him in the back. It really is. Reminds me of that, you know, the play, Julius Caesar play. But, I have to say, I don't know why. Don't ask me why, because I can't tell you, except that I trust God. I'm still optimistic. I think, actually, Tim, Trump has made a lot. Maybe this is fantasy on my part, but my sense of it is that he actually has adopted conservative viewpoints and that he does understand. But I think the big mistake he made was he let other forces get a foothold in the White House, and it's gotten out of control. Mm-hmm. And it is family. What is he going to do? His daughter's coming to him saying, "Now, Dad, you know, things are kind of messed up here.
This transgender stuff, you're going to have to cut it out,
right,
Dad. Me look bad in the
that's right.
with my cocktail parties in New York or whatever."
No, don't. Listen, that's really true. Dad, you know, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. And Dad, look, you know, General Kelly will bring order. Well, General Kelly is isolating the president and filtering everything that goes to him. So there you go. That's the way it is.
Otherwise, everything's good at the White House.
Yes, yeah. you bet.
Okay, this is a political war, but it's also a spiritual war.
Yes.
We know what's going on in the big picture. Hey, Sandy, thanks so much for being on with us. Sandy Rios in the morning. Who are you going to have on tomorrow on your show?
You know what? Tomorrow I don't think I'm going to have a guest because there's so much news.
Okay.
I just feel the need to just talk. I am going to have Cheryl Atkinson on Friday with me, this former CBS News reporter who's famous for reporting on Benghazi and then running afoul of CBS. And she's written a new book called The Smear about the media and all its nefarious happenings. I've had some great guests this week, and I hope people will continue to listen because we're just trying to get the truth out there.
Absolutely.
This morning's interview with Stella Morabito is one people should listen to. It's about what's behind this radical movement on the left, the communist ties. She makes the case, and we just need to know.
Yes, it was excellent. Where is her? Did she write something? I heard you interviewing her on the way into work. Did she write something we can read?
Yeah, Stella writes she's one of the senior editors for The Federalist.
Okay.
The article is something about Charlottesburg, nervous breakdown, Charlottesville, Virginia. People Google that; they can find the article.
Okay, thank you, Sandy. Take care. Bye-bye.
You're very welcome. Okay, bye bye.
That's Sandy Rios.
Yeah, I just wanted to add. I'm not sure why Steve Bannon. There was never a clear explanation as to why Steve Bannon and Sebastian Gorka resigned. Was it misbehavior? Were they disobeying directives? Were they leaking? You don't just someone who's very loyal, someone like Sebastian Gorka, who's very knowledgeable and loyal to this country and to the president. Why resign? You don't. There needs to be an explanation. They resigned because of X, Y, and Z.
Well, I think Gorka wrote a letter about this, a public letter, didn't he?
Apparently, he made that public today. I didn't get a chance to read it yet. He says he fully outlines, and it's been made public as to why he left. But he certainly gave us a pretty strong hint.
Yeah.
In that interview this morning, why he's out. And that's why I asked Sandy that question about General Kelly. He's locking horns with General Kelly. Mm-hmm. General Kelly stands in the door to the Oval Office and doesn't let anything in that he disagrees with. Therefore, makes Gorka's life very uncomfortable.
A glimpse of McMaster in action. Us firing cruise missiles are us firing the missiles into Syria after the gassing. Mm-hmm. Of the civilians there.
Right.
That was McMaster. That was his decision. He was down in Mar-a-Lago with the president making that decision. Whether you agree, gassing of citizens is horrible, but whether we need to be firing missiles into sovereign countries is questionable.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to do that everywhere? Are we going to fire it into North Africa because of Boko Haram? Secondly, Afghanistan, the lack of pulling out of Afghanistan. As a matter of fact, we're sending more American lives into Afghanistan. That was a McMaster decision. So these are not what he campaigned on. He did not campaign on firing cruise missiles into Syria and staying in Afghanistan, and you're seeing that play out with McMaster.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, American Family Radio. Today's Issues, the program. You can comment on the show. You can watch the show at our Today's Issues Facebook page. Ray, what do you think about all this?
Well, let me add one thing to the whole list here. Ambassador John Bolton, a very distinguished man, he has been iced out of the White House. And, you know, he was under consideration for a couple of posts back in the beginning, and that didn't work out. But Trump had said to him, I want input from you. The door is open. Well, he issued a statement yesterday about how the U.S. could pull out of this disastrous deal we made with Iran. And he said, I am releasing this document. It's only 5 pages. You can read it on the internet. He said, I'm releasing this document because the door to the Oval Office to see the president, it's been closed to me. I think it's the same thing. General Kelly just saying, you either go through me or you don't get to the president. It's a pretty sobering sign when you've got people like Ambassador Bolton, a truly great man, who cannot get in to see the president when the president said, I'm willing for you to come in at any time.
Just think about this for a moment. Donald Trump candidate runs on Make America Great Again and clean the swamp, drain the swamp.
Right.
But now he has people around him that are, according to Sebastian Gorka and others, that are directly opposed to that. So as that puts him in a very awkward position heading into 2018.
Right.
Let me tell you something, another factor here. And as smart as President Trump is, he's still human. Mm-hmm. And I think he is a very, very smart fella. And I've never seen a 71-year-old with more energy in my life. Maybe some I've seen with as much, but not people with any more energy, especially a guy who eats Big Macs on an airplane, on Air Force One. But the situation with him is this. President Trump is a political novice. Mm-hmm. He hasn't worked in Washington. He doesn't know exactly how it all works. He's finding out. When he went into office, so he's never hired a chief of staff for the White House. You got to hire those kind of people, and then you got to count on your immediate hires to hire those the kind of right people around them that support your agenda, and you knew that was going to come under attack. All that was going to come under attack from the establishment, from the bureaucracy, from the globalists, from the Obama holdovers, and there's a lot of crossover in those groups I just mentioned, who were going to try to subvert the White House. That's why you had all those leaks that Gorka was talking about. So, it wasn't just like President Trump is going to come into Washington and clean house. Now, he's only one man. Mm-hmm. And he can't if you can't count on your subordinates,
right,
or the subordinates of your subordinates to do the right thing to promote your agenda, then you're going to have what we've seen happen.
To your point, the Trump empire is a family business.
Tower and Trump Enterprises.
It's a family business,
right?
You know, the two sons, the daughter, the son-in-law. He's brought that into the White House, and as you're saying, Tim, it doesn't work. I've always felt one of the smart appointments he should have made is Newt Gingrich.
Yeah. Oh, I'd have paid Newt. I'd give Newt Gingrich a blank check.
Chief of staff. All right. And he is going to listen to Newt Gingrich, who's been there forever, knows the ropes. All right, Mr. Gingrich, former House Speaker, you tell me how I have to lead in the first 6 months. I need you as a teacher.
Newt Gingrich would have been perfect to be chief of staff. Our legislative director, our senior advisor, somewhere at the top level in the White House.
Absolutely.
When the president took over, that would have been a brilliant move on President Trump's part. We're going to come back in 5 minutes. Dr. Ray Pritchard is co-hosting with us, and Walker and Fred, Steve Jordahl will come in. Hey, in a few minutes, we're going to play a fascinating 6-minute clip from Dr. John MacArthur about Charlottesville. You're going to want to hear this. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.